From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, an expose of the greatest secret on earth with Timothy Good. Don't miss it. By the way, happy birthday to Melissa Morton, wife of intuitive remote viewer Sean David Morton. Important part about all of this is several months ago, Melissa was very, very ill. And thanks to you and your special prayers and mind consciousness, she has made a miraculous recovery. And friends of theirs emailed me tonight and just wanted to thank you for everything you've done. In New York, prosecutors brought charges against 27 people, including a Major League Baseball scout, in connection with a billion-dollar a year internet sports gambling ring, the first such case since President Bush signed a ban on internet gambling last month. Search warrants executed in several locations resulted in the seizure of gambling records, computers, and hundreds of millions of dollars in property. The property includes four Manhattan condominiums, millions of dollars in cash, tens of thousands of dollars worth of casino chips from the Bellagio in Las Vegas, art, jewelry, gold coins, and a football signed by the 1969 New York Jets following their Super Bowl victory. The scheme involved placing sports bets through bookies via a secure internet site. The bets were taken on all kinds of sports, including football, basketball, baseball, hockey, car racing, and golf. Lines of strong thunderstorms pelted the south with heavy wind, rain, and hail, turning a skating rink into a hulk of twisted metal soon after 31 preschoolers and four adults inside had fled to the only part of the building that turned out to be safe. That was a miracle. One child suffered a broken bone and another a cut to the head, but everyone else emerged unharmed from the crumpled wreck of the Fun Zone Skate Center in Montgomery, Alabama. The facility doubled as a daycare facility. A series of small tsunamis hit northern Japan following a very powerful earthquake that struck sparsely populated islands to the north. The first tsunami was a 16-inch wave. The agency there, their meteorological agency, said that a second wave was half the height, hit 15 minutes later. In a moment, Stan Dale will be talking with us about something strange that he has uncovered. We'll talk to him in just a moment. In a deal that many called revolting, including me, O.J. Simpson plans a book and television interview to discuss how, hypothetically, he could have killed his ex-wife and her friend, a story his publisher considers his confession. 2 weeks before the book, If I Did It, goes on sale, scorn has already been heaped on Simpson, the publisher, and Fox Television, which plans to air the Simpson interview in two parts, November 27 and 29. Denise Brown, the sister of Simpson's slain ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, lashed out at the publisher for promoting the wrongdoing of criminals, that's what she says, and commercializing abuse. Judith Regan, whose Regan Books imprint is publishing the book, declined to reveal further details of the book's contents. She says, "This is an historic case, and I consider this his confession." She said this to the Associated Press. She also refused to say what Simpson is being paid for the book, but said that he came to her with the idea. The former football star was acquitted in 1995 of murdering his ex-wife and her friend, Ron Goldman, after a trial that became an instant cultural flashpoint. Last night on Coast to Coast, Jack Trimarco, a polygraph examiner for the FBI, talked about the O.J. Simpson case. I asked him specifically if O.J. had taken a polygraph exam. Jack, do you know if O.J. ever took a polygraph test?
Yeah, he did.
He passed it?
No.
He didn't.
O.J. took a polygraph test two nights after the bodies were discovered. And they were given at the request of Robert Shapiro, his defense attorney
right.
at the time. And close by was Robert Kardashian, O.J.'s buddy and a quasi-attorney. And Robert Kardashian told me sometime after he went public with the fact that O.J. did take a polygraph test that night and failed it as badly as the examiner had ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Republican Senator John McCain is creating a presidential exploratory committee the first formal step toward a possible 2008 White House bid. The Arizona senator will file the paperwork on Thursday to register the committee with the Federal Election Commission, according to a spokesperson. A German doctor has been ordered to pay a child support payment to a patient who got pregnant with a contraceptive implant that he put in her. The precedent-setting ruling by Germany's federal court gives both parents the right to receive child support from the doctor until their son reaches adulthood. The unnamed gynecologist inserted a contraceptive implant into the arm of the woman in 2002, but the woman later found out she was pregnant. The woman, 25 years old, was a kindergarten teacher. She could not support herself and the child. So Germany's highest court demanded that the gynecologist pay the equivalent of $755 a month until the child turns 18. You know, there was a sighting about a week and a half ago over O'Hare Airport in Chicago of something very, very strange. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center has been looking in on this. Now, they delayed the release of this case primarily because they had an investigation going on. Peter's on the line with us now. Peter, this is a very fascinating case.
Yes, it is, George, and thanks for having me on for such short notice about this case. This, in my judgment, is a fascinating case. And let me just say, for those members of our audience tonight who are discriminating, and of course, all members of the Coast to Coast audience are discriminating by nature, we all know that. But I have seen the evidence that forced me or allowed me to go public with this to share it with the American people. There was a dramatic sighting, we believe, over O'Hare Airport last Tuesday afternoon. It was 4:30 p.m. on the 7th of November.
What was it like? What did people do? And there were a number of witnesses, right, Peter?
Well, perhaps as many as 24 witnesses. We may never know how many people actually saw it because I'm not sure that everybody is going to report to us. But a ramp employee was standing at the nose of an aircraft at gate C-17 on the C concourse in Chicago. And while he was waiting for the cockpit crew to get the aircraft ready for departure, he just happened to look up above him. And almost directly above him, he estimated, he saw a most peculiar device. It was disc-shaped. And it was about the, it appeared to be about the size of a quarter held at arm's length, George.
Okay.
But it was spinning. He said it looked like a Frisbee, but it was metallic in appearance, and it was obviously spinning. Well, he quickly apprised the cockpit crew in the aircraft that he was about to push back for departure, and they were able to look up at it through the windows on the top of their cabin, or cockpit, I should say. He then called his supervisor, and the word about this sighting went up the chain very quickly, and the FAA was called while the object was hovering there, and my suspicion is, but it's pure conjecture, that the tower operators probably were able to see this object and perhaps with binoculars.
Oh, my. This is fascinating. It really is.
The interesting thing, George, is it gets much more interesting towards the end of the sighting. The sighting lasted an estimated 2 minutes only. Very short sighting. But the person on the ramp was apparently just staring at this thing while it was still there. We know the overcast was at 1,900 feet, so this object was below 2,000 feet. And while he was looking up at it, it seemed to accelerate very, very rapidly from his vantage point, and I'll come back to that in a moment, and it just went straight up, straight away from him. And he asserted that it punched a hole in the clouds in the solid overcast as it departed. Now, other people who were watching it from the side, looking up, for example, at a 45-degree angle or so, reported to me that the object accelerated so fast that they lost sight of it when it first started moving. Some people thought it went left. Some people thought it had gone right. But the person who had the best view of it was that first witness who was looking straight up at it, and it apparently went straight away from him.
Doesn't sound like an airplane, Peter.
No. And the interesting thing, this is Class B airspace. That means that no aircraft can be in that vicinity. No aircraft can be over that airport without having a radio, without being in contact with the tower, and without having a transponder that reports its altitude. And somebody had the presence of mind to ask whether anybody could see it on radar. And to the best of my knowledge, the response was no, they could not see it.
Absolutely incredible. There's more information on your website, right, Peter?
There is. We have not released the original report. We have only summarized it and put a statement on our homepage at ufocenter.com to bring this information to the attention of the American people and also to protect the identity of the original witness. This individual is probably a little concerned about the about his employment status.
I would think so.
If this information gets out.
Peter, stay in touch with us on this, would you?
I will indeed.
Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for the time, George.
It's Peter Davenport with a late-breaking story on what was spotted over Chicago last Tuesday night. And again, they took some time to investigate it before they decided to really blitz it and go public with it. Now, in a moment, Stan Dale with us. He is beginning to see some fascinating things as he forecasts the possibility of surface temperatures, and you know what that means. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Stan Dale was, you know, he has been investigating the possibility of earthquakes and major earth-changing events for a number of years. His website is Stan Dale, and that's spelled D-E-Y-O.com. He has held above top secret security clearances, worked undercover for the FBI. He's our guest this hour on Coast to Coast. Stan, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, good, George. How's it over there in the West
Coast?
Good.
It's good. I know you're very busy, but I had heard about these very strange things and temperature anomalies going on, and I wanted to check in with you, first of all, to find out what you're interpreting these to be. And also, there's some delay with the daily maps that are put out, and explain that one for us.
I can do. I just wondered, would you mind if I address something that Peter Davenport said just a while ago?
Yeah, because you have a role with UFOs. Sure, go ahead.
Sure do. In our laboratory research years ago in Australia, when we were developing flying craft that were circular shaped, we found that if we used a craft that was making electric fields that were shaped like donuts, with a hole being where the middle of the craft was, that we could cut through clouds like a cookie cutter. It would make a perfect little opening, a little circle, go right on through it without disturbing the cloud like a normal rocket or an aircraft
right.
Rip through. And what Peter was describing is very much like what we would have done, you know, what, 30 years ago, perhaps a more modern version of it. And he was saying that the witness was saying that the thing was spinning. Probably what the witness saw was the field spinning around the craft.
Okay. Yep.
And it would have been a spinning vortex that just chewed a hole through that cloud. So I think that report was a very valid one. Now, back to earthquakes. As you know, since 1995, I've been developing a process of looking at quick variations in sea surface temperature, you know, between a 24-hour period.
Right.
And by doing this, I found that if I found rapid heating and cooling, like a little butterfly wing over fault lines that were known, that it would give us maybe 6 hours to 10 days warning, depending on what part of the planet it was on, as to a major earthquake occurring. And every day since then, I have gone to get the daily temperature variation maps for the entire planet from the U.S. Navy in California, there near you at Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, Holly and I have even visited the center there and you know, where the Cray computer is and visited with the staff that produce these reports that we use. Now, from time to time, they have changed their map formats, which gave us a little bit of difficulty because we had to change color bases and all kinds of stuff to analyze the data again. But that's, you know, that goes with the territory because this is a free service they offer as they have time. And they make a disclaimer on their website. It says, you know, look, guys, this is a free effort that we make for you to give you these maps. And if they don't show up for a day or so, don't come knocking on our door about it, because it happens. All we can right. tell you.
We'll get them to you when we get them to you.
Right? That's it. Well, that's the declassified section of the Monterey thing. Their classified section, I'm sure, gets the maps every day.
Right away. Yeah.
Yeah. There are things that do affect the maps, like a buoy will go tropo or go crazy down in, you know, the Pacific and send out a bad signal, and they take that out. Or a submarine doesn't get to pass its data on a certain day. But they have ways of averaging that into the report. In the last couple of years, I've had times where the report wouldn't come out in the afternoon. Like it normally would come out between 2:30 Mountain Standard Time, that would be 1:30 your time in the afternoon, and about 4:30 to 5:30 in the afternoon, either, you know, West Coast time or,
right.
or Mountain Standard. And but if it went over that and into 9 o'clock at night and I hadn't gotten a report yet that I need to produce my forecast, I would either ring them or email them at the center there and say, you know, look, I hate to be a pest, but is it possible that we're going to get a report today? You know, I'm not pressuring you. I realize what the deal is.
Yeah, just let me know.
Yeah, and so I go to bed. And they would say, oh, but we'll contact Dr. Posse, who's in charge of that, and we'll see what's happening. Or we're rebooting the system where we're the problem. We'll have it up in, you know, X number of minutes or hours. They've always done this. Well, on the 12th of November, this, you know,
it was
this,
a few days ago.
Yeah. We did our normal earthquake forecast report, put it up, and on the 13th, I went up to get a report. No report, no report. Went toward midnight, no report. And I thought, well, I'll check it in the morning. I don't want to bother the guys. So the morning of the 14th, I look at it, still not there, hasn't changed from the 12th. So I emailed them and said, look, you know, I hate to bother you, but here's the situation. Didn't hear back from them. I thought, well, that's odd, especially since we're having this huge earthquakes up, you know, in the northeast of Japan.
Yeah, 8.1 up there. My God.
Well, I'd forecast that.
Yeah, you did.
What, on the 3rd of November.
Right.
And it's a real bell ringer, that one. You know, it's huge. But that's not the biggest problem in the Southwest Pacific. So anyway, for me not to be able to get those forecast maps, it's made me blind. I've had to go to older maps of the last couple of weeks to produce a general area forecast for pressures building up in the globe, and it's mainly in the Gulf of Mexico and up in the Kuril Islands and around New Guinea. In fact, New Guinea has a huge thing going. We'll talk about that in a minute. But so anyway, today I've got to talk to these guys over at the center. They're not answering emails, so I get a hold of the duty officer, a woman in the Navy there, and I said, look, I hate to bother you, but... And she says, oh, didn't realize that. We have been having some trouble. And she stopped there and didn't explain. I said, okay. She said, let me check with my boss. So she goes off the mic.
And they know you, right?
When
you...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so she chats a while with her boss and mumble in the background, and comes back and says, well, yes, we've been having some trouble. We'll look into that. We'll ring you back. So I waited for about 10, 15 minutes. Sure enough, she rang back. She says, oh, yes, we are having trouble. We will try to fix it. But if you find that tomorrow it's not been fixed, ring us again to remind us. I said, okay. Is it possible, perhaps, that I could have, when you get it back up and working, the missing days, the 13th and the 14th, because I really need it.
Yeah, and you need those. That's
yeah.
right.
She says, just a second, mumble in the background. Could be. We'll let you know. As I said, we're having trouble. Thank you very much. Click. Right.
What's going on, Steve?
What is going on? Now, all that Holly and I can figure is that we had a sub that was being monitored by a Chinese submarine over in that area here a couple of days ago.
Well, we had the Kitty Hawk being monitored by a sub, Chinese sub.
Actually, Holly and I have been on the Kitty Hawk, had the cook's tour of it by the officers there.
Aircraft carrier, yeah.
Oh, beautiful craft, beautiful. Anyway, it was being tracked by the Chinese, and so we figured that these maps, since they are showing temperature variations, things like that, may have been... discontinued for a period of time because maybe that's what the Chinese were using.
That's
I don't know.
Interesting. Now that is fascinating.
It's a wild guess, but what they made me do was, as I said, go back a couple of weeks to put together 12 to 14 days worth of the maps that I normally make to forecast the earthquakes and add them together kind of mathematically. And you'll see on our website, Holly's put up for today, the 15th of November, a notice that this is a compilation. But it shows a huge threat building around an island volcano down in New Guinea, bigger than the Kurile Island thing.
Stay with us, Stan. I want to ask you a few more questions about this potential threat before I go to open lines later on this hour. We'll be back. And we're with Stan Dale. So, Stan, the potential of this major earthquake near New Guinea, it could inundate that area, couldn't it?
Yeah. This is so big. You know, this is probably as big a signal as I got on the Sumatran quake back in 2004. My concern is certainly for the dwellers of the Solomon Islands and New Guinea and the Queensland coast of Australia and New Zealand, Fiji, Western Samoa. All those are going to be affected, especially the low-lying islands. Should we have a major eruption in the area of the Solomons called Nugu Regia, that there's a big volcano there, the one that I put a circle around on the 3rd, I think it was the 3rd of November as well, and a huge heat pattern developed over like maybe 30, 40 miles in diameter around the base of this volcano. In fact, Holly's got a picture of it up that we took off of Google satellite earlier today. Now, that island is presenting a heat signature that we use to predict earthquakes. It's so big that it's as big as the island of New Guinea, the thermal variation under it. In the last 2 or 3 years, we've even had a submarine report going aground between there and Hawaii from the seafloor rising up.
And we didn't know that.
Pardon?
And we didn't know that, so it, what, smashed right into it?
That's right. That's right. Our maps of the area showed the depth to be a certain thing, and the submarine was going along thinking that was the game. And it scraped bottom there, you know, and almost went aground underwater.
Could any of this, Stan, affect the United States mainland?
Well, if this goes, it will be like, you know, it will send tidal waves or tsunamis out, not tidal waves, it will send tsunamis out all across the Pacific Basin. And certainly you will see effects of it on the West Coast in various keys and inlets. The thing that I'm also concerned about is we've just had this bell ringer over in the Kurile, and that is still the aftershocks that are still over Richter 5.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's huge.
Now, if somebody is on the beach and sees the ocean just pull way back, that's when you better run, right?
They should have run before that. But
they may not know that.
Well, if they see the water start to recede, they had better make any effort they can to get way inland or up high. Probably 200 or 300 feet would be fine, as long as you're not at the end of a little valley or an arroyo where the water will just shoot right up and go up higher than where you are.
But I'd keep going, Stan, until my legs told me to stop.
I think you would have enough adrenaline if you realized what was happening. You'd darn near fly, and certainly that would be wise.
You do not think that the fact that these maps that you're looking for have been delayed because there's something major afoot and they're concerned about it? I would assume if they knew there was something big happening, they'd let everybody know about it, wouldn't they?
Yes and no. They would certainly probably tell the emergency responders about it, but and probably say, you know, keep it under your hat until something...
Well, why not just release it to the public? What, the panic?
Well, because this is a security issue. If it looks like we're going to take a real hard thump anywhere, east or west coast or in the New Madrid even, I don't think that you'd want to tell your enemies that you're about to have such severe trouble that you can't defend yourself.
So it's the enemies they're concerned about.
I think more than anything, and they certainly have been doing everything they could to prepare people. The news releases over the last 6 to 12 months, all along the west coast in the New Madrid, have been telling, in the center of the country as well, have been telling the people, look, make emergency preparations. We're wanting you to make everything earthquake-proof. They've been telling people, building it up over a period of time so as not to cause a panic. So I'm torn between whether I would say officially, yeah, this is what's going to happen and not, rather than prepare things along the way and then get an emergency response ready as best we can for when the moment strikes and hope for the best.
Okay, Stan, well, you keep updating us, website standale.com, and let's hope you get those maps, my friend.
We'll try.
All right.
That's the best again.
Stan Dale. And I will be back in a moment with open lines. I'll give you the numbers again. Here we are. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wild card line, ready to go, 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Open Lines now on Coast to Coast. We'll go east of the Rockies to get things going. Hi there. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Joan in Silver Spring, Maryland.
Sure, Joan.
I'd like Art Bell to hear this, too. I had a very close encounter with a UFO in 1972. This was reported to NASA. And I worked with someone who years later told me that about 50 people saw it from a distance. And I saw it close up. I had been teaching with my daughter in Potomac, Maryland, and we were driving down Montrose Road towards Rockville. And my daughter was 6 years old, said to me, "Look, there's a flying saucer." I said, "Oh, sure." And there was a light over the trees. Now, there were these woods in between this Montrose Road and the Corvette Shopping Center. There was a Corvette's there at that time, and we were driving down the hill. There wasn't any traffic behind us, so I was standing at a green light watching it. It was starting to go across the road, so I drove across the road and went into the parking lot. There was a meadow there at that time. There is just a little bit of grass and a big office building there now. And my daughter was afraid to get out of the car. This was treetop level. And my first impression was, what is this, a new carnival ride? Or, you know, what is this? It was all lighted up from one end to the other. There was no noise. This was treetop level. And there was a ladder hanging that was sparkling. And I stood there watching it for about over a minute. And my friend who told me years later said that people ran out of Corvettes because somebody announced, you know, they had seen something, and they were watching it. But this was from a distance.
Did you see further structure to the craft, Joan? I mean, could you tell the underneath side of it?
Do you know that I actually saw light bulbs on it?
Light bulbs?
All the way around.
Light bulbs?
All the way around it. It looked like a movie marquee.
But how did it disappear?
It started moving very, very slowly over the trees.
Got smaller.
Where the road
smaller.
Wasn't going. Pardon me?
And it got smaller until it just simply, I guess, disappeared, right?
Well, it was so large to begin with. It was like the size of a large house. And it was right above me.
So you don't think
it
was man-made? I mean, but when you say light bulbs and things, I mean, I don't think that would
like light bulbs. I'm not kidding you. And it looked like a movie marquee or something.
Well, and what's so interesting about all of this is other people saw it from afar.
They saw it from afar. They didn't see it close up like I did. And my daughter did. And
you know what you can do for us, Joan? If you could, if you have capability of doing this, draw a picture of what this thing looks like, and we can go back into Peter Davenport's old national UFO reporting records and pull them out and see if anybody in that area at that time reported this, and see if Peter can help us a little bit with that. I'd appreciate that. Thanks. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George. This is Mac out here in Northeast Oklahoma.
Hey, Mac. Thanks.
Police officer, 32 years. In fact, I'm on duty now.
You're coming up on retirement, aren't you, with 32 years under your belt?
Well, I'm shooting for the oldest active duty officer in Oklahoma.
Now, how old would that make you then?
Right now, I'm I'm not there yet, but I'm 55. I'm hoping to, at least in maybe another 6, 8, maybe 10 years.
Well, police officers don't go that long until, you know, the normal retirement age?
Normal retirement age is probably about where I'm at now.
Really? I didn't know that.
But I'm healthy and I'm still enjoying the work. Feel like I can contribute.
So. Good for you.
Well, I want to tell you about was October 24th, which I think was a Monday, if I'm not mistaken. I worked midnight, sleep days. I got up about noon and bad habit. I got a cigar and a cup of coffee. Went out on my patio because I don't smoke in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Was just enjoying the morning. The weather was nice, you know, sunny, good weather. I'm sitting there smoking a cigar, and I'm in a lawn chair, and I lean back and look up, for what reason, just looking at the sky, and I see something. And my first instinct was it was a balloon. It was black. It was round. And I thought, well, some kid, because I'm not too far from the school, I thought, well, some kid's lost a balloon.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there watching it, and then all of a sudden it dawns on me that although this looks like a balloon, this thing has got to be, maybe 3,000 feet high, you know, which is going to make it a pretty good-sized balloon.
I was going to say, that's not one of those little ones that you pick up in
no.
the store.
But it was just round, and that was my first thought, it's a balloon. But then I realized the clouds are moving. This thing is sitting there. It's not moving. The clouds are moving with the wind. If this was a balloon, this thing would have been blowing. It hasn't moved. And I'm sitting here watching, and I'm thinking, what in the world is this? And so I'm looking, I'm thinking, well, I don't have any film in my camera. I'd run in and get the camera. If I go in, I'll never find it again. So I just sat there and watched. I watched this thing for, I'm going to guess, about 5 minutes. And finally, I thought, well, I'm going to see if I can get a little better view because there were some tree limbs kind of in the way. So I moved. When I did, I could see it from an angle. I could see the side, and the sun was glinting off. It was silver. I sat there thinking, wishing somebody would come. My daughter was supposed to be there just any time. I'm thinking, somebody come so I can point this out so I'm not losing my mind. But I sat there and watched this thing for the longest time, and it was hovering. It wasn't moving. And then when it finally did move, it went straight up, not like a helicopter, not like anything I've ever seen, but it went straight up, and it went fast. It went right through the clouds.
How strange.
And I heard the guy, what they were seeing there in Chicago, sounds so similar, but this thing, I don't know what it was.
If you were manning the old police desk and somebody called in with a report like that, what would you say? What would you think? Come on, be honest.
After having listened to this show for as long as I have, I would probably take them real serious.
Okay, yeah, you're tuned in. But I would guess most officers would not.
You'd be surprised how many
really?
Guys that I have talked to that have seen things. I could tell you about another sighting that I made here all back several years ago, back when Art was on, that absolutely freaked me out that nobody else saw this thing because it was huge. And that was back when the Phoenix.
Oh yeah.
Phoenix was seen. They had seen it. It was the meteorite shower. I'm trying to think of what they call it.
There's the Geminis and then the Leonids, which are going to start up again.
Leonids.
Yeah.
And Art had said, if you look to the south and to the west at such and such time, you can see this. And so this particular morning, I get up. We have a hospital parkade, which is one of these covered parking lots. It circles around, and you can get up on top of it. I pull a patrol car up there, got binoculars. I'm going to see a meteorite shower. And I look over towards the west. Here in Oklahoma, we've got a lot of military bases. And I see three lights coming at me. And I'm thinking, okay, this has got to be a formation, a couple, you know, some
sure.
fires have been coming. I'm watching it. It's still coming at me. And I realize that it's a triangular shape, and they're staying. They're not moving. I mean, they're not wavering. So I realize this is not three objects. It's just one. And I sat and watched this thing. I had binoculars. It was moving, just slowly moving, and it was huge. I couldn't even begin to estimate. We have a large oil refinery research center here, and this thing stopped above the research center. All I could tell you was it was black. You couldn't see through it. It was that time of the morning.
Could you see the lines on the triangular sides of it?
All I could see
definition.
Was that it was triangular shaped, and that's and it was it. Was,
but only because of the three lights, right?
Because of the three lights,
yeah.
And you couldn't see the stars or anything through it. It hovered for what seemed like an eternity, but in actuality was probably only a couple, 3 minutes. It dwarfed this research center that we have here. I mean, it was huge. And when it went off, I mean, it went so fast. It was like, did I really see this, or am I just imagining it?
I am told that that object is man-made. Now, I don't know if it was reverse-engineered from something else, but I think what you're beginning to see and what so many Americans are seeing all over the country now might be a man-made vehicle that we have created for some reason, and it could be a transport.
Yeah,
but it's out there. Hey, thanks for the call, officer. Appreciate
right.
it, and
I
take
appreciate
care.
You. I've spent a lot of nights. You keep us awake out here, so I enjoy your show.
Okay, let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Yeah, this is Blaine. I'm also from Oklahoma.
Hey, Blaine.
I listened to your conversation with Stan about the emergency preparedness.
Yeah.
What did you ever find out about the water-powered generators from back in August?
Individual called the program during open line, said that he was coming out with a water-powered generator, that he was going to sell it at one of the huge hardware stores.
And, Home Depot.
And we have checked in with them, and Tommy tells me that they either don't know anything about it or they're not saying anything about it. I'll tell you what, if they ever hit the market, like he described, I'm buying a couple.
Yeah, same here.
And I'm not even going to wait. I'm just going to go down and pick them up and turn them on.
Well, I'd like one just in case anything does hit.
Yeah, I agree with you. And what's disappointing is nobody will confirm that this thing is real. Let's move on. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. It's Matt in Salt Lake City.
Hey, Matt. Hi.
Hey, the guy that was on there talking about the earthquakes in Papua New Guinea, when is that supposed to take place?
Well, he doesn't know. He's seen signs of something big, and in his case, it's either days or weeks. There's a window there, but that window's getting very close.
Has it been like over years that he's seen this, or just
no, just recently.
Oh, okay. Hey, well, thank you for all the good work you do, and.
Okay, I appreciate you checking in. Let's go to our next wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Bob from Orlando.
Hey, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's your chelation therapy thing going?
Good. You know, I dropped 6% in terms of calcification. I would have been delighted with 30%, and now I'm on a maintenance program, so I'll get tested again in 6 months. We'll see how it's doing.
Okay, because I looked at the website, and I couldn't find any doctors here in Florida.
They will be able to help you there. If you go to the website, there should be a way to email them, ask them, and they'll do some homework for you.
Okay. Sounds great.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Appreciate it. And Lex has just sent me something, and he said, George, I need you to open this up urgently. So I will try to open this up and see what Mr. Lonehood has sent me. Computers. Have you noticed that your computers have been very slow lately? I mean, mine are very slow. Okay, here we are. How about this? And he is saying that two docks were destroyed. Where's this coming from? Okay, this is coming from California. Two docks destroyed after a 5-foot surge rolled into the Crescent City Harbor caused up to $700,000 damage. The surge is believed to be the result of the undersea earthquake with a magnitude 8.1 that hit Japan earlier, the one I mentioned. That's incredible. In California, the National Weather Service reported ocean surges from 1 to 6 feet, waves gusting up to 30 miles an hour. Surges were observed from Port San Luis on the Central California coast to the Oregon border. Crescent City, 20 miles south of Oregon's state line. That's incredible. Stan, you're right on the money on these things. I'll be back in a moment. We're going live to the United Kingdom. Timothy Good, our guest, right here on Coast to Coast AM.